the Daytime Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, secrets come out on The Bold and the Beautiful, Nikki falls off the wagon on The Young and the Restless, again, Freddie Smith returns to Days of Our Lives, and Rebecca Herbst returns to General Hospital. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Welcome.
Hi, guys.
Jillian Bo, welcome.
Hello.
And Jamie Giddens, welcome.
How's it going, Luke?
It's going pretty well. You know, your blind item set the internet on fire this last week.
Oh, did they?
Can you share any details?
Huh? No, that's why they're called blind items. Let's see. Let me go back and see if there's anything I can. I don't know if I can or not, but I'll check. You mentioned the blind items, but let's start with my last General Hospital spoiler post. Let's go there instead, because I don't have to confirm anything, because the lead part of it was that Laura was getting a new man. And lo and behold, it's already happening on screen. So, and for some of the DC readers, I went ahead and did a smiley face in the comments when one of them guessed. It's Kevin! I am hearing that Kevin Collins and our fair Laura are headed for a slow burn romance. And with Lucy Coe coming back for the nurse's ball, you can expect some.
That's
commentary.
Good timing. Well, there's some other good news. Jamie, in addition to your blind items, a while back you went and blogged about Rebecca Herp's contract negotiations, and everything eventually turned out okay. But she's officially going to be back on our screens May 4th. You looking forward to it?
Yes, definitely. And they recast Jake, and that was a major part of planning for the upcoming What Happened to Jake on Cassadine Island story. From what I was told, the brass didn't feel that the original actor was very strong, and so that's why he was recast. And you know, it's so delicate when it comes to children and talking about those types of things, because of course everybody's on social media now. Even child actors. I saw the little kids who play. There's some twins that are on some soap. Oh, they play Connor on The Young and the Restless. They have a little Twitter handle, and of course we know that it's their parents. But it's like you can't really, I love my liaison fans. We ride or die for each other, but a lot of them are really hurt because, you know, that's the little boy that has always played Jake he was the one who was there before. There's a connection there, and I get it. You know how I felt about the kids that played Vicky Hudson's kids on Another World, but the truth of the matter is I agree with GH in this regard. That actor, as adorable as he was my little liaison baby, but he wasn't a strong actor. And if you're going to be doing some dark, twisty, what happened to the kid that made him be a demon seed type story or anything, you need a strong child actor. And it is possible to find them because, you know, Days had Little Sierra is a great demon seed. Spencer on GH is great. And The Young and the Restless has an amazing...
Also, the actress who played Jocelyn on General Hospital is good, too.
You know, and YNR right now has an amazing kid actor playing Max in a very similar demon seed story. So I'm hoping that, you know, that kid being on there and Liz coming home is going to, you know, kind of have Jason a bit torn about his two families, but I've heard that Liz is going to be spending a lot of time with Franco in the future, so we'll see.
Oh, well, I know one thing this last week. J-Sam fans were very happy about Jason and Sam, because whether I wanted to see it or not, which I didn't, I was seeing these retweets in my timeline, and I just cringed every single time. I know a lot of people love him, but Sarah, I wanted to ask you, what did you think of Jason this last week turning over ELQ back to the Quartermains?
Well, that is something I, like probably, you know, several million other General Hospital fans have been wanting to see for years, is Jason getting back into the ELQ fold. And this should have been, to me, a huge scene with all this drama and Nicholas facing off against Michael and you know, Tracy coming out of the hospital bed and showing up at the board meeting and all that kind of, you know, stuff, like it's Empire or even Young and the Restless. And it just was like, oh,
anticlimactic.
Hey, someone signed some forms. Surprise! It's, you know, it's yours. And then Michael being all, but I'm still Michael Corinthos, just to piss me off. It's like they have the elements of a great story, and they're running away from it. I do not understand.
Well, their lack of ingenuity and execution has something to be desired a lot of times. Jillian, I have notes here from you this last week, which are, how hot are Sunny and Anna? Are you digging them that much?
Their chemistry is really good. Fanola and Mo's chemistry was really good. I liked when Sunny and Anna teamed up to get Carlos. I liked them. I really enjoyed them. But Lord have mercy. I'm sorry, but when Sunny was in that church with Carlos, that dialogue was just horrendous. All the cliche Latin and words and so forth. It was just so, like, it just took away from all that. It was just really anticlimactic. And Jeffrey Vincent Parisi was just so over
Puss
the
and
top.
Boots.
He was just really over the top. I was just like, oh God. I don't know what happened.
Jamie, what did you think of Anna and Sunny's story and the ELQ story?
Well, I guess I'm the lone dissenter this week. I enjoyed, not dissenting in regards to Sunny and Anna, because, yeah, I'm like Jillian with that. I'm loving them going off on an adventure. It reminded me of Puerto Rico, even though I know they didn't go anywhere. They just
went to the back lot.
They went outside on Prospect. But I will give this to Frank. His outdoor scenes really look well done and classy. It doesn't make me groan like the PNG soaps did. So, you know, I felt like I was actually in, was it Ecuador? I enjoyed the Sunny Carlos face off. Yes, you know, I mean, Carlos is Carlos. I mean, he's always kind of been, you know, that over the top
mob dialogue was terrible. Ugh.
Character. I thought it was funny, you know. You're gonna kill me in front of the Madonna. I liked it. It was cute. It was funny. But no, with the ELQ story, I really have to disagree with it being anticlimactic. I felt two of the things that people have been begging for with this show, regime after regime after regime, is number one, a hospital story. Number two, restore the cues. And I feel that did both. I did not want to like this Tracy Worms in the Head story. I did not want to like Hamilton Finn. I did not want to like this Jason and Nicholas Insta feud, chest thumping, you know, that we have to reapply Tyler Christopher's face makeup every other day because Jason hits him. Like, it's becoming ridiculous now. It's like, okay, Jason is like, he's going to need plastic surgery because Jason has basically damaged all sides of his face. But it all worked out for me in the end when he delivered those shares back to the family in that hospital bed. That hospital is so significant to the show and the Quartermain family. And Tracy's dialogue, where she talks about how he broke Edward's heart when he rejected the family and took Morgan as his name instead of Quartermain. And, you know, Monica's like, can you just be grateful at once? And then Tracy's like, I have a butt. And then she commended him. I think that I felt it was heartfelt, and it accomplished something that fans have been saying that they want. My only minor gripe is I wish Tracy was running the company. I find it, for me, I just think that Jane Elliott as a Jane Wyman-esque, you know, mogul of a certain age would be much more interesting than me trying to buy any corporate board of directors taking direction from Backstreet Boy Michael.
Menudo.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, he's not Menudo. He couldn't be a Menudo. But, you know, he has a Hispanic name, but it's faux. But no, I mean, I don't have the issues with Michael that I see a lot of people having online, but I don't buy him being able to lead a Fortune 500 company at, you know, 22 years old with a felony on his record, and he didn't even finish college. So that is irksome, but it's no sillier than Hakeem on Empire being a CEO.
Well, I was just going to say that because when Empire told us you can't be on no board of directors or run no of directors.
Well, it would also help. It would also help a lot if Michael was even a quarter of as interesting as the
team. Daytime soaps, though, we've had to suspend our disbelief with that in regards to corporations ever since the beginning of soaps. Because when I learned that whole you can't be, you know, you can't run a publicly traded company if you've been to jail. I learned that with Martha Stewart when that story came. You know, that's what I didn't know that before because I was like immediately, well, like, what about Roger Thorpe when he ran Spalding?
Yeah.
And because soaps do it all the time. Like right now on The Young and the Restless, you know, Victor is all trying to push Adam.
I guess with that, they could say, well, it's not publicly traded anymore. It's private. So I guess they could play fast.
Well, and that's the thing. EOQ might be privately held too now, so I don't know. But I mean,
well, you mentioned The Young and the Restless. Let's go there. What did you guys think of Billy and Phyllis versus Victoria, and then Summer, Jillian?
Ooh, let me tell you something. That read that Phyllis gave Victoria in that office at Newman, I said, that, like, Gina really came, like, I have no shade against Gina. I think Gina's doing a good job playing Phyllis, but when she told Victoria about her ass and said she didn't deserve Billy and how she was just playing, you know, trying to be a daddy's girl, I was like, okay, Phyllis is on the scene. That was fantastic. I think, you know, even Summer, you know, I wasn't really feeling Summer. I'm just like, oh, God, why can't a straight bullet with peanut butter take this girl out? But I want that. clip a good.
That's the podcast title, Luke. Summer needs a straight bullet with peanut butter.
It'll be straight bullet with peanut butter.
There you go.
You know, but I felt Summer's confliction because she was just like, you know, when Phyllis was like, you gonna sell me out? When she was like, you know, you kidnap people too. I felt Summer's confliction, although I don't see why Summer should feel conflicted because, girl, you did not grow up an Abbott. You grew up a Newman. You were an Abbott for like 2 seconds, so stop it. I thought that was good. My only thing is, this is for me with this storyline, the weakest link, and this is no shade, I know. Either she gets fired, she quits, and then Heather Tom says over at B&B, you know, I'm coming back to my throne, and she takes over the role. We all know Heather's not coming back as Victoria. However, this Ryan R. has hammered it home. Even under this regime, they have hammered home that Victoria is just like her father in business, and I don't feel that with Amelia Hindley. I feel as though Victoria's motivation when she's going after, you know, as Jamie calls it, Norton antivirus, it just seems like she's just mad that Billy, you know, pulled up, you know, she's just mad at Billy. She's just mad at Billy and she's jealous of Phyllis. So that's why she's taking him to court. It doesn't feel like how you know, you would suspect a Victor Newman child would feel like, yo, ass.
But Victor used corporate machinations to get personal gain also.
But you felt why he did that. I'm not disputing that, but I don't feel like, what I'm trying to say is I don't feel that she is like her father. They keep saying, they kept hammering it home all this past week. You are just like your father. You are just like your father. This is Victor Newman's child. I don't feel that with her. I just feel as though she is just pissed off about, you know, Billy.
I think they made a mistake, you know, because when she told Jack she wanted Billy fired from the company, like, I thought that was hot. And if they had, like, I would have liked her to say that she wanted Jack, and that she wanted Billy and Phyllis, because that would have driven the point home of why they would need to bone, you know, if they're both screwed outsiders, why not screw? But when she was like, I want Billy out, I felt the fire of the Victoria Newman character. But when they lost me was the next in segments when it was like, I think that we can get back together if he's not. And I'm like, okay, now that's, I wanted her to just be vengeful and angry, not all.
Right.
Right, I mean, Victor made everything personal, but he was never a wimp about it, and he never allowed it to make him a bad business decision.
And I would have liked for Jack, you know, when she said, I want Billy fired, I would have liked for Jack to be like, damn, if you ain't like your father, and mention, like, how Victor did that to him when he took Nikki from him, and Victor's contingency was like, I'll give y'all Jabot back if he dumps Nikki, and you know what I'm saying? But
Jack and Victoria, though, had some hot dialogue. They didn't go, I mean, yeah, they didn't mention, you know, beat by beat historical moments, but they did talk about, you know, oh, like, you've always been honest. I mean, their banter was, you know.
Yeah, but their banter was cool, but I just didn't feel the fire, like, okay, she is Victor's child. Like, I feel as though in the years that they've made that shift with Adam being like Victor, but you know, they still say that she's like Victor in corporate stories and stuff, but I don't feel it. I just do not feel it at all.
Yeah, I somewhere Maria definitely introduced this whole it's hard out there for a woman element to the Victoria character, which she didn't used to have that Victoria under, you know, with the Heather Tom character, and even the way that they initially wrote Amelia's Victoria, because a lot of it has to do with the writing.
Yeah,
because,
I'm wondering if it's directing too.
Yeah, early on with even Amelia, remember when Amelia's Victoria was like was Drusilla's boss, and you know they all reported to her. I mean, she had that; she could play that
Maria
introduced that whole, oh, it's so hard for me to balance being a mother and I want to, you know, have a home and a white picket. And, you know, they're kind of keeping that thread going, which I agree with you. They should just scrap that. I want a Victoria that is Iris Carrington Corey. That is yes, there I go, because I'm referencing one of the greatest soap operas of all time.
Oh,
so
Lord.
There I go. Go on mute if you don't want to hear it.
No.
You know.
You go on mute. Why I got to go on mute?
Because it's my show. That's why. but, you know,
okay,
I want Luke and Jamie. 50-50. That's right. I mean, Iris Corey had those daddy issues, and you saw it brilliantly. Eden on Santa Barbara, also drinking game. You know, whenever she was trying to run the company, and Mason was, Dad, you know, I just don't think Eden has what it takes. And Eden walked into that foyer. Well, Mason, why don't you look me in the face while you stab me in the back? It's like they have that with the characters, but they wimp out and want to do this whole, let's soften her.
It just annoys me, because it's like, you keep hammering home, you always say she is like Victor. You've had Victor say she is the child that I'm the closest with because we are just alike. And I just don't feel it with her. It's not the whole mom thing. I just don't feel it with her. Like, sometimes I will see like her doing it and I'm like, oh shit, she about to tear it up. And then they just, I don't know. I'm just wondering if it's a directing thing too, because the dialogue is there. They keep saying it, but it's just not jumping off the pages.
I think they. Sorry.
No, go ahead, Sarah. No.
I think that there is this, they don't like strong women right now in this regime. It's being portrayed as a negative thing. The, you know, Hillary's like, I want a, you know, a seat on the board. I want to run the lab. And people are like, you monster, you know, versus, you know, get back into the kitchen. You know, it's like, there is not the, like you said, the Iris Carrington, the Tracy Quartermain at her, you know, at her best, the just, you know,
well, they've got Nikki drunk again.
Yeah, the woman who kicks butt. It's just there is this sense that like women have are weak or they're brittle and hard, and
it's
that's
like Miranda. It's like Miranda Hobbs said in Sex and the City, the movie, in the Halloween scene.
Drink.
You shut up. Battlestar Galactica.
I haven't heard the last time he referenced that show again.
When she said, the 100 then. Anyway.
I don't mention those things on this show, so there.
You've been watching TV 5 years, so whatever.
Since
the movie, which
I've been watching it long enough to found this podcast.
Well, you want a cookie for that?
Shut up, yeah, and eat them,
you, did you get Victoria Rowell on here? Don't make me be cooking. I did 17 years in the pen for this podcast, okay?
Does that make me Andre?
No. Yes, you're no, you're not Andre. You are.
I'm Rhonda.
You're Rhonda.
Oh, girl, no, look, white girl.
Well, look. No, well, yeah, well, wear some flats next time you're on the stairwell. But,
not on flats.
Well, that makes me Lucius then. Okay, I can handle that. Jillian,
oh, girl,
Jillian.
No, back to Sex and the City. My point, Miranda, in that scene, she said there are only two Halloween costumes for women. Witch and sexy. What was the other one? Sexy something. And that's basically how they write daytime right now. There are no powerful Lucinda Walsh. There, okay. I went away from Santa Barbara to another world. There's no Lucinda Walshes.
I felt as though they were going that route with Phyllis when Phyllis was like, I want to take Newman down brick by brick. I felt, shit, they got a bad bitch pack. You
they've
know,
got the elements. Good. They've got, like the Hillary story. It's like, if Hillary, you know, I don't know why, and yeah, I do know why, because Jill, and I'm not dissing Jill, because I've enjoyed the heck out of YNR overall, so this isn't a usual Jamie's dissing Jill, but I do know that Jill is not interested, from what I've heard. They're not, and it's not just Jill, it's been many regimes at that show since Bill Bell. You can see it from what we see on screen. They're not, LML came in and wanted to do politics and land developments. Maria brought back Jabot, but it was mostly so she could just do a bunch of doppelganger capers. And, you know, and Jill has not been interested in telling stories about Jabot and Newman. It's like, let's make Jabot a fashion house. That didn't go over well. Let's make them all fight over internet security, you know, and I'm sure that's more Pratt than Jill, but it's like I really don't get with daytime how, I mean, because it would not happen in prime time, you know, and this is, you know, I'm not going to go into one of my rants, but it's like, you need to respect the crucibles that are set up on your show. If you come onto a show as the EP and the head writer, and the show has been the number one show in daytime, and then you look at the trajectory of the storytelling and you see, we hit number one around the time that, you know, there was the war between the Newmans and Jabot. You would kind of think, and then not only did it hit, you know, that's around the time when those elements were on the show, did it hit number one, but it stayed at number one for many, many years with Jill and Kay fighting over that house and their, you know, gay son and the Newman Ranch and the Jabot Cosmetics and Newman Enterprises. Why, if this was so successful for 20-odd years, almost 30-odd years, would you feel the need to come in and say, I don't really want to write about cosmetics. I want to write about viruses. I don't really want to talk about the Chancellor Mansion. I want to have Billy turn it into, you know, a really bad interior decorating disaster. It's like, I just don't know why people feel the need to not respect the crucibles that are already set up when that's why fans are so angry with these shows all the time, including this one. You know, that's why we have to do the Luke started it, the Save the Quartermains campaign. We shouldn't have to do those campaigns. If these things
I can bring out the picture with red X's on people's faces.
If these things are that popular that fans are still talking about them for generations, you should leave them alone. When you're setting down to write your long story, you should go to, you know, a beauty site. You should go, if you're thinking about a story, Chuck Pratt, you don't go to an internet security blog and think up a story that you can write about Norton antivirus. You go to Women's Wear Daily or somewhere that, see how calm I'm being, I'm not going to rage. You go somewhere and you get inspired about the beauty industry. And you write about the beauty industry because that's what Bill Bell wrote. And that's what he made really, really successful.
I mean,
you, if you want to write about ugly houses and internet viruses, you create your own show. You don't come on these shows that have been on for 40 and 50 years and decide you're going to change the crucible. That's
and
all.
By the way, that's going been a problem back to Lynn Latham's regime, who's like, because Lynn was like, you know, I think it makes Jack look weak if he's running talking about cosmetics. So Javo's focus is going to change to real estate development, which, what? But that was the thing that happened, and that was, you
really?
Know, why? Yep.
So she yep. never heard of Max Factor. Max isn't short for Maxine. I hope she knew that.
I don't
oh,
know.
Well, you know, a few years ago there was talk of Jack, you know, I won't say where
oh, gotcha.
It came from, but there was talk of Jack becoming an interior decorator. It's like,
I
stop
that.
That
does anybody remember Clear Springs?
Yeah,
that's what she was talking about with Lynn Reed.
Yeah. And
remember when Victoria was going to write children's books? I mean, it's like, why do you feel the need? And it would never be allowed. It would never be allowed in primetime. There's too much, you know, there's just, I have to say, it's like, I definitely believe in autonomy, but really with this day in soaps, if you get hired, like, it needs to be part of the job interview. It needs to be, what are you going to write about the history of what are you going to write in 2016 that reflects the popular elements of this show? Now, of course, you'll have your free reign to tell your stories, but you got, you know, no one is going to allow, if Greg Berlanti suddenly tomorrow lost his empire and got hired to write Empire, they're not going to let him say that Cookie was bit by a radioactive spider and that she now is going to be a superhero, you know, rescuing
that
pop stars.
Banjo and shit like
you
that.
Know, they're just not going to, and Daytime does this all the time under the guise of evolving or changing it up. But it's like, if when you're gutting Chancellor Manchin and you're making Victoria a wuss when she came out of the, she came out of Nikki's cat wanting to read a spreadsheet, you know, you gotta stop that because that's not what people want. And, you know, you
so.
Got,
and why don't-
so since we're on the subject of business stories, they're wasting all of this time with her just being so desperate to be with a foundation. I want to be on the foundation. When her husband is the person who loaned Jill Abbott the money to reclaim Chancellor Industries, why not say that Jill is late on those loans and Hillary finds out about it and pulls a Scarlet? Remember in Gone with the Wind when Scarlet realized that Frank Kennedy was basically letting all of their friends get lumber on loan?
Yeah.
And she was like, bullshit, they're paying today, baby. That's what you, they should be doing at Y&R. Hillary should look and say, I noticed Jill is late on the loan
like,
payment, Devon.
It should be a situation where Jill gets fresh with Hillary, and that makes Hillary snap and be like, bitch, we need that loan.
Yeah,
today.
And then Hillary's smart and like she reads the loan documents, and there's a clause in there that says if she's late so much as once, Devon can repossess Chancellor. That story would be so hot.
Yeah. I wonder if they're just doing something with this Hillary thing because maybe something with Dr. Neville, Dr. Jazz Hands, maybe this is like the reaction from it. I'm like,
I'm going to take this pill that's going to make me a great business person. Can we get Victoria to take it?
Well,
ooh,
I'm going to reveal one of my blind items. One of the main reasons that we're stuck with that stupid story is because Chuck blew his budget. And yeah. So that's why that Jabot lab set is standing. You know, which that's a poor excuse to me, because go back to telling stories about cosmetics then. I mean, we don't have to be stuck with this.
Prime example, you know, look, Kylie Jenner, she has that successful lip kit, lip gloss line. They can have Jabot doing one and Newman doing another.
And they can have real celebrities, and they've done that before. But I mean, this would be the perfect opportunity to have, you know, go right into the CBS family, you know, have Jabot say, we just signed, what's that girl that plays Supergirl, Melissa Benioff?
I don't know her name.
Melissa, we just signed Melissa Benioff for an exclusive cosmetics company. I mean, an exclusive cosmetics brand sponsorship deal. And then get another a CW star. Then, you know, Newman got Brash and Sassy just tapped. What's the cute
Gina
black
Rodriguez.
Girl from?
Yeah,
there you
Gina
go.
Gina Rodriguez.
You know, I mean, there's
yeah.
a way to do that that'll cross promote the brands that will, you know, be smart and fun and what the shows used to be. I mean, when you look at people's memories of this show, they're happy when they're thinking about the Glow by Jabot years and the men's line and stuff like that. No one cares about antivirus on this show.
Jillian, what are you thinking of Nikki's storyline?
I'm not a particular fan of it because it just seems as though whenever I've noticed it, this really did start under Maria. It's like, we're not bashing her, but I'm looking at the history of it. Whenever they don't have anything to do for Nikki, they get Nikki drunk. Now, I will give Maria this. When she had Nikki as a drunk, she wrote the hell out of her doing that. But it seems like ever since Maria left, that's just been their go-to, like the same thing with Sharon, just make Sharon crazy or Sharon steal something when they don't have anything for her to do. They don't have anything for Nikki to do. Like, I thought when she had that big intervention, that was her aha moment, but it's like, you know, the other day that just had me hollering a little bit, and then I shook my head because I told JB, I'm like, you know, she gets ran over on Old Decatur Road, and Jack is like, oh my God, Nikki. And she's like, oh, nah, I'm okay, girl. Like, what's tea? Like, I just got ran over by a car, but it's all good. Like, how you doing? Like, it was just so, like, blasé. And you would think that would have snapped her out of it. Nothing. They just don't have anything for her to do. So they just want to have her drunk, like.
Well, and I have to shade here a little bit, and I love Nikki Newman. You know, that's one of the most iconic characters in the history of daytime, but my grandmother used to always make fun of the fact that Melody had trouble crying on screen.
Oh, Lord.
Now, under the Maria years, she really learned how to cry. You know, she really, you know, she brought the emotion. So she obviously proved that if the material is good enough, she can bring the emotion. Not that she didn't have good material under the Bill Bell years, because she obviously did. But Nikki was so much more of a romantic heroine back then that maybe there just wasn't enough. You know, Maria brought real gritty rawness. I think Maria did well by Melody. That's one thing. You're right. She definitely did. But when that warden, or not warden, whatever, the prison guard came out there and told Nikki that Victor wouldn't see her, and you audibly heard tears, but I didn't see moisture the first coming out of her eyeball. She was like,
I you are like, lying, because I was like, oh,
what?
Girl.
She cried like a 4-year-old. You know, little kids cry like that.
It's just like I guess she's reflecting, like, they ain't no material there, so I ain't gonna cry. But
I'm like, but they used to have that stuff that they could spritz in your eye that would make you cry. What they call it, Sarah? The soap sets used to have that all the time.
Oh, you know, menthol or something?
Yeah, menthol in your eye. Because she needed some menthol.
Well, menthol in your eye would burn, but, like, up under there, make it water. But, yeah,
teardrops, Jamie. That's, I think, what you're thinking.
Yeah.
No,
like,
I think it was menthol. I think on the soap sets,
you
they
can't
put
menthol would burn your eyes. I think they
I'm
would put
telling
it up
you,
under
they
there.
Had
no,
some
no, no.
sort of menthol-type product. Yeah,
they had, like, glycerin. Like your little,
because menthol would make your eyes just.
Because
blind.
I heard the wine I said used to have that rocking back in the day.
Sarah, yeah, like they may not be able to figure out what to do with Nikki on The Young and the Restless, but Days of Our Lives has figured out what to do, or something to do with Freddie Smith. He's returning in July.
I am so excited.
Oh, sorry.
Actually, this is like the first thing that I'm kind of excited about on Days in a while, because Sonny and Paul, an untold story, they were hot together. Christopher Sean has just disappeared under Dina Higley. Last time we saw him, he'd been brainwashed to be a killer. We don't know if he's been secretly killing the other half of the Salem population that we don't see or what, but it's this definitely has potential, because it's just such a waste of talent. I am willing to go with a really implausible back from the dead storyline to get the character of Will Horton back on the show. That's a character you need.
Portrayed by whom?
Portrayed by
RuPaul.
I mean,
Drew Garrett.
I mean, portrayed by someone who's a good actor. That's it. I don't care who it is, as long as they're good at.
Well, that disqualifies the last one.
You know, but you know,
Garrett would be good.
Now,
I'm saying all after I've made fun of MTS's Cried for I'm a Hypocrite. I'm sorry.
I know, that's right.
Jamie, we had some Bonobo Chick, our longtime listener, wanted our thoughts on Eric's exit. And in the notes, we have Eric and Jennifer Hunch. Now, I know you're always into hunching.
Well,
what are your thoughts on Eric and Jennifer?
I thought that was awesome, but why? It's like, I guess that's a great memory for Eric to have when he's bending over, you know.
Literally, when he's on the way, literally after hunching her, he wakes up, goes and takes himself to jail. What? That was
Lou balls for the next 10 years.
Hopefully he shepherded, unlike, say, Sam.
I don't think he has to be, you know, fresh for the...
That final scene is this is the time that Soaps decide to get real about prison. Victor's prison on Y&R is basically Shady Pine's old folks' home. It's not but this, they put him on the bus with people that looked really scary. And they're basically saying this really good man is about to get, beaten for the next however many years of his life. Why did they really drag him down? They made him be all late for sentencing. It's just... Yeah.
This was supposedly what we're seeing now is the time when Dina was having her sabbatical. And this is more Josh. And here's the thing, and I'm just going to go ahead and get this out of the way, because I respect Josh Griffith as a writer. I think he's a very talented writer. He writes really dark, edgy books.
I love the storyline he wrote for Y&R for Ashley's Takeover.
Yeah, he co-wrote Marty Saybrook's Gang Rape. The guy is a very talented writer. All that being said, I don't think he was the best fit for Days of Our Lives 50th anniversary season. Now, there are many people who disagree with me on this, and people who love to say it's a soap opera. I'm like, what soap operas did you grow up watching? This unrelenting onslaught of ugliness and depravity is not just a soap opera. It's like, are you freaking kidding me? There's always been a balance of home and hearth and romance. And I'm sorry, Teresa and Brady getting dressed up to go to the Regal Beagle so that Marie Wilson can interrupt their date does not equate to the epic, beautiful romances of Shane and Kim and Bo and Hope and Patch and Kayla. And no, I know that there's no budget for them to go to Greece like Justin and Adrian did, or to go to New Orleans like Bo and Hope did. But you can still tell a romantic story right there on those 5 sets that they have, as opposed to just always being about unrelenting ugliness. Maggie Horton at 70 has a broken back, and not in the good way, because Deimos has, decided to pay Victor back for something that happened 30 years ago when Victor was on screen 30 years ago, and they're totally rewriting Victor's history. 30 years ago, Victor was trying to get a fiance. Her name was Diana Colville. She was played by Jeannie Francis. He was in a rivalry with Roman Brady, a.k.a. Rojon, a.k.a. John Black, who didn't know he was John Black then. He thought he was Roman. We saw that on screen. He was not trying to screw some chick who looked like Nicole Walker. We know that the only reason Victor got involved with Nicole Walker is because he was pissed off that Kate paid her $5 million to marry Lucas. We know these historical things. It is, you don't get a gold star from me. You might get it from everyone else, but you're not going to get a gold star from me for coming in and changing history that we saw on the screen and then do this to so that you can throw an old woman down the stairs and break her back. On the heels of Hope being a murderess, her stepson being a rapist, Jennifer being a pill-popping mess, Jennifer Horton, and people are loving it. Oh, Jennifer, this is so dark and wonderful. Jennifer was a rom-com character. This would be like if someone decided to... Jennifer was Day's rom-com Meg Ryan. She was Meg Ryan in Daytime opposite Matt Ashford. Yes, she had a couple of dark storylines with, you know, dealing with Jack's rape with Kayla and her making him love her despite him feeling
Lawrence
he was
raping her.
Lawrence raping her. But essentially, she was a spunky, scrappy rom-com character. At the time that she was so popular that according to the soap magazines, her TVQ was as high as the women on the Golden Girls at one point because she was so beloved and popular. At that time on the show, she was a spunky cub reporter who was like, Jack, I'm going to make you love me, Jack. It's like, I don't get when you take over a show. My first thing would be, let me take a look at when these characters were at their most popular, and let me try to write to that. Jennifer being a mess of a pill-popping, you know, moody, I'm going to pop some pills. That's not why people fell in love with Jennifer Horton. I'm not saying she has to stay spunky and feisty.
I love Marlena telling her ass off, though.
But it's like, come on. Why is Jennifer not running Bella Magazine and still being fun and scrappy and having a new romance with some, you know, publishing guy who's like, you don't know anything about running a beauty magazine. Excuse me. I mean, there's just none of that.
Amos. I thought she could add a romance.
She frowns. I mean, I think she frowns when she climaxes. She doesn't do anything but frown and that's not the Jennifer Rose I fell in love with. I fell in love with a spunky, happy girl. This is basically saying, hey, ladies out there in America, you're going to have a whole lot of fun as a teenager in your 20s and in your 30s, but in your 40s and 50s, you're going to frown all the time. Remember Hope with her raised eyebrow and her seductive ways? It's like all these women do is frown and scowl.
And you are destined to be alone if you are a woman.
Yes, you're going to be miserable and alone. You're going to start murdering people.
You're going to get a bunch of cats.
Y'all fell in love with the slutty Jennifer who took her diaphragm with her.
Jennifer was so nice.
She's doing it a long time.
No, that girl held her
leg. She used that diaphragm as a life preserver when they fell off the boat.
You're trolling. The trolling hand is strong with you,
Jennifer
Jillian.
Look, she managed not to give it up to Emilio with that big old chest and that Jerry curl.
Sarah.
It's like we want Jennifer needs to have a heart and light. There needs to be balance and romance on this show, and there isn't any. I'm not excited about Jennifer's pill popping making her.
It's been really dark for the past year and some change on that show. It's like there's nothing like light and fluffy.
She's pill popping, and then her daughter is burning him, is fricasseeing a man.
She is left eye. Abigail,
you know,
left eye.
It's like, where does it end? I mean, there's no. And then Marie Wilson is, her Summer is depressed and almost drowned herself in the river. Or not the river, the ocean. Y'all know how I am. What?
Yes! Oh, God!
She almost drowned herself in the LA River. And now she comes home and she's like. And then they make Maggie a deadbeat mom. They change Maggie's history. She's like, I was just a selfish young girl and didn't want a baby. So I'm like, what? Maggie was a cripple on a farm when Uncle Mickey found her. It's like, why are you changing all of our beloved canon to ruin these characters, in my opinion? For what? To what end? To what end? It's what I'm trying to figure out.
I don't know, but Sarah, earlier Jamie mentioned people frowning during sex, and you can bet that Katie is one person who frowns while having sex on The Bold and the Beautiful. What did you think this last week of the fact that she learned part of Ridge's secret?
Well, at least she's got something to do now other than be pathetic. You know, And like, remember she had that past. At one point, Ridge was the love of her life because everyone's the love of everyone's life when they date for 5 minutes on the show.
Or you're on Bold and the Beautiful.
Yeah, and so she, you know, that is an interesting thing. If she finds out that the Spencer, you know, Caroline Spencer's kid is that, and we've already seen she was going to try and tell Bill. He wanted to, like, you know, recite the 12 steps to her instead and wouldn't let her get, like, a word in edgewise. And so now she's got this secret and this power. And I hope this means that we're going to see a Katie who, you know, instead of getting drunk, decide she's going to stir some stuff up. Because, you know,
man.
I want to see her, like, use this to have Spencer, like, get a foothold in the forest, or I want to see her decide, I am going to have, better yet, I am going to show Bill that I am more than this pathetic drunk by having the scoop of the century, and I'm going to put it on Ion Fashion's cover without him even knowing, and, you know, watch the fireworks explode. I would love that. Or if she could team up with JR, who's got her suspicions. I mean,
hey, back up. I'm like, well, you jumping so damn fast.
I always do that. Rick, who has his suspicions about Ridge and Caroline already, you know, I don't know that we needed the beat of, like, the drunk doctor who's lost his license decided to block him.
Any sense? I was like, what? That just, what just happened here?
Why are you violating HIPAA all over the place?
Yes, him and Taylor must be colleagues. Cause I'm like,
you don't know.
I'm like, you don't know Katie from a can of paint, and you there, girl. Let me tell you, Ridge Sterrell. That ain't none of his, girl. I'm like, what is wrong with you people? Oh, Brooke, your timing sucks. Because I'm like, Katie comes rushing in there with that red hot tea that could change, that can just, Bill has been itching to get rid of Ridge. And y'all come, you're drunk. I'm like, oh, your timing sucks. I want to, I was like, Brooke, you really are.
And we've seen that storyline a million times with this triangle. One of the main reasons that Bill, you know, ended up sniffing around Brooke, other than Katie's postpartum depression love matching, you know, when she did her eHarmony version of hooking them up, you know, but that was what we were told. It was, well, Katie has a problem with Bill because he swears and smokes cigars and drinks a scotch. And Brooke is like, he's a man, Katie. You have to accept him for who he is. But Katie was all, you drink too much. You drink around Liam or Lip or whatever their baby's name is.
That is bullshit.
Pookie. What's the baby name? Pookie Sean.
Will.
You know, you drink around Will. I can't take it anymore, Bill. I'm going to win an Emmy because I'm not going to let you drink around that baby. So we get through that. Bill doesn't end up having to be a full-on 12-stepper. He's like, okay, I won't have as many scotches, whatever. So then Brooke becomes the lush. I need these cases of vodka because I'm rich, and, you know, because I'm rich, I need cases of vodka instead of just a bottle. And then the two of them are, you've got to stop this drinking, Brooke. Oh, I have to drink because I want Bill's penis, and there's no other penis in Los Angeles, so I have to drink. Oh! So then we get through with that, and now it's Katie's turn. Oh, my sister wants my husband, so I have to drink.
Well, you know, it could be worse. It could be Liam Hope and Steffi Wyatt and the rehash. I mean, it's basically the same storyline
with
the adult version, except for it's with not Bill, Liam, Steffi, and whoever.
Bill, but you know with what? That triangle, is so the only thing keeping it going. And that is, you know, tantamount to bad storytelling. And I hate to say that because I really like Brad Bell and that whole team there. But when you have to, when I thought about that triangle, Liam married Steffi because Bill, you know, rigged that gondola to where she couldn't get there. So a couple got married. basically not knowing the truth because Liam thought Steffi abandoned him. Then what?
When Liam thought Hope abandoned
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he thought well, Hope's not going to be here. So since she, you know, you talk about black people could never get married on Bold and the Beautiful because we arrive on CP time. And you know, if you don't get there,
what's CP time?
Nothing. Keep going.
I'll go ahead and say it. It's colored people time. You can never say that phrase. But you know, we have so it's like on Bold and the Beautiful.
Don't say that.
But we, you know, we would never get married because on Bold and the Beautiful, if you show up late, your date is your spouse is gonna marry somebody else, and that's the thing. It's like what happened with Hope and Liam in overseas. Remember when Deacon kept Hope from getting there that time, and then Quinn keeps Liam from getting there, and then Steffi. This is really repetitive, and Brad Bell has to be called on this. You know, that's one thing. Brad kind of has a cocoon. We definitely go there. But the soul press does not go there on Brad like they would Ron Carlovati or anyone else. And I don't know if it's because he owns the show or what, but he gets away with repeatedly telling the same storyline for that triangle.
I think it's because Brad has that charisma.
Yeah, and he's a good guy. You love him in a room. You know,
yeah,
but it's like
Chuck is like, screw you if you don't like the storytelling.
But the thing of it is, he has to be called out on bad storytelling. Bell last name or not, this is really repetitive. You know, and it's like, it's not, his dad didn't do that. There were layers and gravitas to Bill, I mean, not to Bill, to Bill's storytelling about Brooke and Taylor and Rich. There was much more psychological underpinnings to that story other than boyfriend's not here, so I'm gonna marry someone else.
Where is Ivy in all this? She comes back, like, is she coming, like, she came back for like 1 minute and she's gone. Like, is that girl off the show? Is she gonna play a part in this? What is happening?
I read in one of the magazines, I don't remember which one, but I think she is coming back. But I don't know what. I mean, she'll come back and Steffi will accidentally, you know, drop a banana peel and she'll slip into the LA River.
And then she'll end up falling in. Dating Wyatt because they can only.
Oh, no, they're sore ass. You know, they got a sore ass baby Pookie Shawn.
So RJ.
Sarah? Yeah, RJ will be the love of her life and they'll go on a couple of speed dates. And then they'll be getting married at the beach. And then they'll be like, I can't believe we're here. Because that's what drove me crazy with Wyatt and Steffi. Can you believe we got to this moment? Heck no, you just freaking met each other.
Sarah, yeah. Deacon's alive.
Praise the Lord.
He survived the cliff fall.
Praise soap Jesus.
Drusilla didn't on Y&R, but Deacon did on Bold and the Beautiful.
Deacon, we need to recruit.
I'm just kidding. I can swim too, girl. You're not being silly today.
We need to get Deacon on the Olympic diving team because dude can swim. Dude is a cliff diver. But I mean, I cheered that happened because Deacon and Quinn are the best couple on the show, and I don't understand why they will not write for them. Why, you know, I don't understand why Deacon apparently went off of Quinn when he really should have gone again to Bill Spencer with this news and used it to his advantage. That is, you know, then you have a plot and then, you know, Quinn and Deacon start hating each other and then they like, you know, but they're attracted to each other. Okay, come on.
I'm going
to
tell you why. Quinn is a freak in the bedroom and, you know, she does stuff that Brooke and Amber and Bridget wouldn't do. Look, when he be just really digging it on in, she slip a finger in there.
On that note, final thoughts, Jillian.
Wow, really? My final thought is for Y&R, like, again, I'm enjoying the show. It's just little things that just need to be fixed on there, and it's mainly the women. Stop having them look schizo or drunks or weeping messes. If Victoria is going to be like her father, she needs to go there. If it's a directing thing, take it up with the director. Hillary,
She doesn't need to be on Ashley's foundation. She can, like Jamie said, take over a chancellor or something. This is just boring. And find something for Nikki to do besides drink and, like, play, you know, chicken in the road.
Jamie, final thoughts?
My final thought is I am ready for little Nicole to birth Maya and Rick's baby so she can climb Sasha like a tree, because you would not take my cute little tangle-eyed light-skinned boyfriend from me. I want that little girl. And you know she ready, because she was rolling her neck like a reunion of the Real Housewives last week. Mm-hmm. I want her to scratch that little girl's eyes out.
Grow up, scratch. I want her to punch her in her face.
I want Vivian to learn that, because you know how black mamas are. This woman is causing your child, your baby, pain. And then for her to find out that that is her husband's outside.
Side hoe.
If they do, look, if they do it right, Vivian will make the evening news. She will make the evening news. She need to pull a butcher knife, because, yes, we pull butcher knives when you cheat on us.
The Daytime Confidential podcast does not condone
physical
violence.
She needs to pull a butcher knife on him and tell him, I'm going to turn you in from a rooster into a hen for bringing this hoe into my family. Yes. Ooh. Yes.
Okay. Sarah.
Well, my final thought is relating to soap businesses in general. Part of the problem with passcode is it's an abstraction. Whatever the hell.
Sarah's so done. Sarah's so done. I love Sarah. She's like, whatever. Passcode. Go ahead.
Like, it's an abstraction. We can't see it. We don't know if it works. We don't know what it is. We don't know that it isn't like five other things in the App Store right now. And the thing about that, one of the many good things about having fashion and beauty storylines is it's tangible. You can see those Forrester dresses going down the runway and decide for yourself if you think they'd sell. You can see the new lipstick Ashley Abbott just invented you can see it. It's real. It's tangible.
And you can
it could be anything that's tangible.
Fabric.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if they wanted to do toys or silverware or just anything you can hold in your hands and we can see on camera rather than this abstraction.
Pasky should have been a beauty app. That should have just been a beauty app.
And Melrose Place, D&D had some bomb business stories. You would think that he would have, I mean, they did stories about beauty and stuff like that on there because it was an advertising firm, so they were always coming up with ad campaigns. You know, Allison would be like, hi, Amanda. I came up with this campaign for Snapple. Shut up, you stupid little vapid whore. I'm gonna creep your
And by the way, this isn't just a Y&R issue. I'd like to see ELQ making something tangible. Last thing we've seen, I think, was those defective condoms and some.
No, child, you forgot pickle relish. You forgot the pickle.
You forgot the pickle relish.
You know, Days of Our Lives, like, we've seen that Teresa has made some fashions. I'm still not sure exactly what
her
business
is. She wears prom dresses herself, but she's supposed to.
Well, my final thought is about current day soap business, and that is I'm looking forward to this Not Safe for Daytime. The clips look cheesy, but it looks like it's going to be fun. I like the fact that CBS Daytime is trying to think out of the box, mm-hmm. put a different spin on things. We'll see how it goes. Maybe it won't live up to expectations. Maybe it will. But for now, I'm excited about it. On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at Daytime Confidential.
Were you not going to talk about the Chew View cook-off?
No. On that note, we'd encourage you to comment on this episode at DaytimeConfidential.com. Add us as a friend on Facebook and like us there, Facebook.com/DCConfidential. Follow us on Twitter, Twitter.com/DCConfidential. Until next time, so long.
Watch out for that peanut butter bullet, girl.
Bye.